Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Welcome into our Richmond audience on 910 AM and 105.1 FM. To everybody else all over D.C., the DMV, listening to 106.7, the Fan, the Flagship, and wherever you're at coast to coast. You're out here in Vegas, maybe, enjoying yourself ahead of Sunday's game on the Odyssey app. Thank you for listening to the program, as always. We are Grant and Danny. Got a couple more calls we'll get to and some reactions continuing in a few minutes on Turgeon out at Maryland. That's the breaking news of the day. But I wanted to kick off our second hour, Danny, by turning some attention to the football team, who have won three straight, who are gunning for a fourth in a row out here in Vegas against the Raiders on Sunday, and who will do so without a few key pieces. Ruled out for Sunday, Landon Collins, a little bit of a surprise with the foot. He's been playing awesome these last few weeks as the defense has turned itself around, and I think a big key to this defensive renaissance, they haven't allowed 300 yards in the last four games they've played, has been how he's played in the box as an extra linebacker roaming around in that Buffalo nickel. They won't have Wes Schweitzer. Another big story of the season has been all of a sudden they're running the ball really well. When we talk to Logan Paulson or some of the other film critics that we have on the show that break this team down, they tell you that Wes Schweitzer is kind of an unsung hero in the running game. He's physical. He pushes people around. 18 starts the last 2 years. Started five games. He's been invaluable at center, both guard spots. So he will not play. And maybe the biggest loss, I'm not sure if he'll have the biggest impact in terms of ripple effects sent through the planning for the game. But certainly the guy that you notice the most when you watch a football team game at this point, no J.D. McKissic in the backfield, who has caught handful of passes in big spots week in and week out for the better part of the last month. And if you look at the running game, he's been way more involved. First time all season, he's averaged the last couple weeks about seven carries for around 40 yards. As they've committed more to the ground game, he's spelled Antonio Gibson and kept him fresh. He's provided a spark and a burst and, you know, out of the shotgun, seems to pick up some big gains when they need him. So that's a dual threat who's been huge for this offense. He scored both of their touchdowns last week.
And he is a guy that I'm always pounding the desk to get more work more often, not just third down, not just as a check down on third and long. And they're starting to do that, and lo and behold, the offense has been better lately. You add in, though, your usual cast of characters on the questionable list, as you touched on, Curtis Samuel, working out of the Curtis Samuel side field. Eric Flowers is a big one with a foot. Now, I don't know how questionable these guys really are, if it's just some rest and you're just kind of doing this pro forma designation, or if they really are actually question one when it comes to this. Because remember, this offensive line continues to be beat up. They're on their fourth center in Keith Ismail, and there aren't many options kind of behind him at this point. Flowers has been an unsung hero for them. He has been an absolute mauler, especially in the run game. You know, you look at some of the highlights that folks will kind of tweet out during the week, and he's knocking guys stiff, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 yards down the field. He's been really, really good against a group. And obviously, Flowers isn't going to match up directly on Ngakoue and Crosby, but you want your best group out there, if possible, every week, but this week with a couple good bookend pass rushers. If I'm Oakland, I'm running some stunts and games and kind of mixing and matching. I'll test out Keith Ismail. I'll test out whoever my third left guard is if Flowers can't go on a couple of things against one of the best pass rushing tandems in the league. This is not a great development here for Washington.
No, it's not, and it's that time of year where everybody's dealing with it.
Sure.
I mean, the Raiders, and a Raiders fan might tell you, we're playing without Darren Waller. That's a bigger loss than anything you're dealing with. And that's probably true. But there is just a collection of pieces week in and week out, it seems like, they play without. And by and large, it hadn't mattered. You know, it's been that kind of run where no Montez Sweat, no problem. No Chase Young, we'll figure it out. And so you just hope it's that next man up. Somehow we get to the end of the 7 o'clock or so time frame on Sunday, and they won the football game, and Antonio Gibson played well, and Jarrett Patterson stepped up, and they promoted Wendell Smallwood from the practice squad, who's going to fill in the pass-catching third-down pass protection role for J.D. McKissic, and maybe he catches four balls for 52 yards, and he plays McKissic well. I mean, that's kind of the hope. It doesn't always work out that way, but I wonder what people think about if we just isolate it to these three guys. We can go back into Landon Collins in a second because we haven't paid him a lot of attention. But Collins, Schweitzer, and McKissic, which loss is biggest? Which will hurt the most? Because my first thought would be McKissic. He has sneaky been incredibly involved the last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. You don't really think much of it because it's only seven carries or it's only five catches. But 12 touches is a ton, to be honest with you, for a second back. I mean, 30% of his rushing attempts this season have come in the last two games as they've pounded the ball against Carolina and Seattle. Like, that's a big part of their plan now is, hey, it's Gibson, Gibson, Gibson. Now it's McKissic, McKissic, McKissic. Now we go back to Gibson, and the defense will be worn down. 30% of his carries, and even more than that, 40% of his rushing yards have come in these last two games, and he's coming off of the two-touchdown game. So I would say maybe him. I mean, it also depends what's Wendell Smallwood like in pass pro on third down. Does he miss a block? Does he pick the block up and allow Heinicke to get the ball down the field? But I also tend to think Landon Collins has actually probably been more responsible for this defensive turnaround than people think, both by getting him out of a position where he was struggling, so you get better play on the back end and less breakdowns there, fewer issues.
Yeah.
But he has actually been super impactful up around the line. And it's a big reason why they've been so good at stopping the run, I think.
It's 100%. Double down on that. So McKissic's their second leading receiver, both in terms of yards and in terms of receptions. That matters.
Probably targets, too, I would guess.
100%.
Or close to it.
Yep, he is. He's their second leading target guy behind somebody that comes on our show every Monday that's by the name of McLaurin, who you should look up as an excellent player. But he's their I keep beating the drum on this. He's their second best passing game weapon. He's not just a check down guy. He runs a bunch of different things. He can do an awful lot. And, you know, you sort of saw that here over these last few weeks as this offense has picked up. But again, this isn't a juggernaut. They're not the greatest show on turf Rams or anything. But as they're kind of getting comfortable with their identity of a lot of body blows, a lot of short stuff, who's better at catching short stuff than J.D. McKissic at this point? So that is a massive loss on offense. But if you're asking me which one's bigger, it's Collins. This defensive renaissance they've enjoyed since the bye week basically coincided with Landon Collins moving into the box, blitzing, playing downhill. They're getting pressure now, not by just rushing for the Carolina/New York Giants when they were good way, the Ron Rivera style, but this is Jack Del Rio earning his keep. This figure some stuff out, dude. Have Camp Curl blitz. Have Collins blitz. Have whoever the hell get after the quarterback a little bit and just mix and match. And you know, you don't let them know where it's coming from. And you install a new blitz every week, it seems like. I mean, I remember Greg Williams back in the day had Sean Spring have over six sacks because they couldn't figure out a way to pass rush. He said, "All right, let's have the corner run in and do it. We got to figure something else out, a way to hit the quarterback." And that's what's been happening here over these last few weeks. But you mentioned it in the run game. That's where Collins has just been sparkling, coming downhill and hunting. He's been great.
Yeah, he's been a game changer. I thought the Broncos game, you could make the case he was one of the best players on the field. I know they lost that game. But there have been plays in each game that they've won during this three-game stretch where he flashes, and they're routine. It's happening series in and series out now. Like, you're getting the kind of production you anticipated when you acquired him. I don't. You could parse up whether it's worth $16 million or not, whether the linebacker position, the Buffalo nickel position he's playing, whatever they're going to call it, Buffalo safety, is worth that kind of annual average value. But that's not really the debate. Like, they brought him in to be someone that offenses had to notify pre-snap each other where that guy was at. They brought him in to be someone that has to be game planned for, or at least has to be kept in mind as you're trying to move the football. And for a long time here, that just wasn't the case. And in this new position, he's in the backfield, he's getting TFLs, he's blowing things up, he's being physical. You're seeing it. This is what it's supposed to look like. And now he's not going to be available this weekend. I worry a little bit less, oddly enough, about the defense against the Raiders as I am about the offense, even though the offense has been playing so well. And the defense early in the season struggled so much. Part of it is how the D's played this last month, Danny, sub 300 yards per game in all four. really having had just strung together in succession some of their best performances now stacked on top of each other. But a lot of it for me, too, is not having Schweitzer on that offensive line where they're already thin in the interior. And Crosby's an outside guy, but you're operating with a backup right tackle in Cornelius Lucas against the guy who gets the most pressures in the league. Now you're plugging in a center with very little experience against the interior for the Raiders. I think Heinicke's going to have to be on the move, both by design, get him out of the pocket, some bootlegs, get him out of the pocket on some nakeds, design some runs, but also he better be ready to scramble as things break down around him.
I think that's smart. I mean, again, I'm terrified of Max Crosby. That guy's excellent. And people will say he's only got 5 sacks. That dude is a havoc-wreaking menace. Pressures, quarterback hits, disruption. He's the ultimate case study for why the sack itself is an overrated stat. He has dominated games at times. He's dominated possessions. He's changed things. He's really good. And, oh, by the way, his running mate is Yannick Ngakoue, who's on pace for low double-digit sacks in his own right and who's been really, really fearsome on the opposite side. That's why I'm actually a little bit more nervous about this game. It's twofold. One, the Raiders, even though their defense hasn't been world-beating by any stretch, it's their ability to rush the passer, especially with those couple of guys. And then DeSean Jackson, honestly. I know some people might scoff at that. He's doing his, I'm not practicing this week because I have a soft tissue injury on one of my legs. I'm assuming it's a calf or maybe it's a groin or a quad or something. I think it's a calf, honestly. But he'll be there game time. He's going deep. That make me, I mean, we're still, it's not the first half of the season where Washington couldn't get that right, the deep passes and guys are wide open. We still saw miscommunication this past week and Tyler Lockett was wide open. You don't need to miscommunicate for DeSean Jackson to be open. That guy gets open deep against everybody. He's the best deep threat since Randy Moss, even though you put up with all the frustrating stuff. Every other week, he can still do something ridiculous, and that's a game-changing potential here.
I mean, you're down a safety. Whatever you want to call the Landon Collins role now, depending on what kind of look they get in the package and how many guys are out in running routes, he has to cover. And we saw DeShazer Everett come onto the field, who I like. But there was a bad play and a miscommunication where it looked like maybe he was out of position at the end of the game where they gave up the touchdown to Seattle. So there is some buckling down now that has to be done and some concerns with DeSean Jackson specifically. If he plays, getting down the field, no one's been better in the last decade at catching deep balls than him. I mean, you can't give up the 65 to 70 yarder. And there's no one in the league who's completed more passes of 20-plus yards this year than Derek Carr. A lot of those were to Henry Ruggs, who's no longer on the team. But Jackson's supposed to replace him, and they kind of got that going on Thanksgiving. Let's go to the phones, 800-636-1067. So hop in on the Gambit DC listener lines. We want to hear which of the players who are out is going to create the most problems for Washington. Their inactivity. Who's going to sting without their presence the most? We'll get to your thoughts on the football team in a second. But we're multitasking. We're walking and chewing gum here. Some folks also want to weigh in on the huge news of the day in town, and that is, in the college football side, Mark Turgeon's out after 11 years at Maryland. So we can go back and forth with calls on both things. Greg's in Frederick on line 4 on Grant and Danny. What's up, Greg? How are you?
Oh, man, I am great. I'm thrilled to hear that Turgeon is gone. I'm a diehard Maryland fan, and I pretty much knew this, but hearing that they've only made one Sweet 16 in the last 10 years, that just hurt my ears a little bit.
It's more than 10, by the way. You've got to go all the way back to 03. So 1 in 18 is even worse.
Oh, boy. Whew, thanks for that.
Enjoy your Friday.
Way too many years with an early brutal loss like the George Mason game this year. It seems like that would happen every year. And several games this year with some dreadful first halves where they looked like they were clearly not ready to play. And then beyond that, it seemed like there were several years where there would be some real head-scratching transfers out of the program, guys always declaring for the draft way too early. That seemed like that was a trend. And did I hear the expert that was on earlier give him an in-game rating of 6.5?
I was pretty surprised by that too, Greg. Yeah, I was.
Okay. I thought I heard that right. So,
yeah, I was surprised. Yeah, Thank you for the call, buddy. I was surprised by that because the knock from fans, and he even said, fans will disagree with this, is that he's a terrible in-game coach. That's also the knock from most media members, I would say, too. He obviously disagreed. He mentioned some slow starts. They've had those. We keep talking about the three losses, and it just can't help him that one was to George Mason here in Fairfax and another was to Virginia Tech in the state of Virginia. But they almost lost to Hofstra.
Yeah.
I know we don't really count almost losses, but that was a 69-67 game when Hofstra was 1-3 that they squeaked out. So it's not like when they've won – it's looked like it's supposed to. Tom is in Kensington on Grant and Danny. What's up, Tom? How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I'm in my 30s, grew up in this area like you guys. And really, at my age, Maryland basketball was the best thing to watch. And I grew up idolizing their players. I remember a couple nights ago, I think it was Wednesday, when the Terps and Wizards were playing at the same time. And I voluntarily didn't watch a second of the Maryland game. And it was really because of Turgeon. It's just his coaching style is just so unwatchable, Danny.
Is that why fans don't like him so much? It's just that they think the style's boring?
Yeah, I mean, let's dribble the ball for 25 seconds and just hope for the best. I can't take it anymore. And I just thought it's been a long time since we've been nationally relevant, and I understand that. And Turgeon actually seems like a genuine dude, which is hard to find in college sports. But I know the timing of this is suspicious, but I would rather be in limbo with this than deal with another season of him. And I know it's not unrealistic to think we can do better than one Sweet 16 appearance in the past 18 years, as you just mentioned. Growing up, it was like, okay, like, I wonder what seed we're going to be going into the tournament. That was always a given that this was a tournament-relevant basketball program. And now it's like, oh, my God, are we even going to get in?
But remember, and thanks for the call. I mean, at the end of Gary, that was not really the case.
Totally fair.
Since the 2003 Sweet 16, I mean, they had a run, like an 8-year run after 03, where they missed the tournament half the time, from like 04 to 11. So that was pre-Turgeon, that was Gary, and you didn't even know if they were going to make the tournament. I always like to remind people of that. Now, Danny, you're still more of a Maryland basketball fan than I am. I like going to games. I go to one or two a year, try to. I like live college basketball more than watching on TV. But when I went to Mason, it kind of ruined my Maryland fandom some because I became a huge Mason basketball fan, obviously. But I bring this up only to ask you, I mean, they were a tough watch. Like, if you're a Maryland basketball fan and then you flip on another game and you see them getting up and down the floor with athletes, you're wondering, what are we doing here?
Well, so it's funny when the caller said that because I'm going, who's less aesthetically pleasing than UVA basketball, right? But
they love Tony
now,
Bennett.
Yeah, now, well, there's program right now is that this year's not particularly great, but over the last decade, how good has UVA been? And the fan base has grown and people give a damn, et cetera. They could tolerate a lot if you're a national one seed. If you're,
good point.
If you're winning games in the ACC, if you're, you know, eking out wins against GW and Hofstra, kind of as you alluded to, it's not going to have the same cachet. And it is. You can muck it up. Gary used to muck it up at times when he had certain teams and he'd run the same flex cuts, the same curls, and the same things, and he's sweating and screaming at his guys, getting every ounce out of them. But you're winning some of these games. You're succeeding a little bit more, especially when it came to kind of late season, postseason, and stuff. To me, one of the biggest knocks, though, just kind of as a side, was what I always felt like was a lack of development. Some of these guys would come in as highly heralded and star potential as anybody else. Guys like Diamond Stone and Melo Trimble and Jalen Smith and you know, you could name them. And there are a couple NBA players there, but like the best NBA player that's gone to Maryland recently is spot-up shooter Kevin Huerter. You know what I mean? Like who's a 9-point-a-game guy for the Hawks who basically waits to catch and shoot. That's no disrespect. I mean, the guy's an NBA player. But where are the guys that turn into lottery picks, that turn into stars, that change teams? I mean, Alex Lynn is on his 19th team at this point. Has been a DFA and a coach's decision, a DNP's like more than half of his career. It's a sort of an anecdotal measure of it, but it's one of those things where you get this excitement, you hear about the great player, and then it just never really turns out all that great. You know, maybe that's a developmental thing. Maybe that's just again some adjustments or lack thereof.
We're taking reactions on the news. Mark Turgeon in year 11 out. Supposedly, he stepped down. School is phrasing it as a mutual parting of ways. This was after the extension that he got and them recommitting to him this offseason. But I'm in Vegas getting ready for Washington football team, Las Vegas Raiders. Football team's a 1.5-point dog on the road, taking on the Raiders on Sunday. So we're multitasking. We want to hear from you guys on that on the Gambit DC listener lines next. What we're tackling here is, who are they going to miss the most? No J.D. McKissic in the backfield. No Wes Schweitzer up front, who's become really helpful in the running game on the interior. And Landon Collins, who's turned his season around, helped turn the defense around in his new position, also not going to play. Which of those injury updates worries you most? We're Grant and Danny on The Fan. Danny, I'm sitting in a studio in Las Vegas. The last time I sat in this studio was the morning after the Capitals won the Stanley Cup.
You know, I remember that. You and I were out there, weren't we?
Oh, you know what? I got to run that back. I was thinking I was here when they won. That's not true. Game 5 was out here, but I stayed home. I was doing NBC Sports Washington in front of the arena. You and I were out here for games 1 and 2.
It was 1 and 2. That's right. Oh, that was
a blast. We were here the morning after they won game 2. So the last time I was sitting in this studio was the morning after Braden Holtby's The Save.
The Save.
2018, about 3 years ago. How about that?
I will talk about that moment in that arena until I am dead. I'll call my, God willing, my great-grandkids around, and the whole place thought it was a goal, and except for like two or like a couple hundred people that knew the truth. That light didn't go off, and that wave of joy, and then the reverse wave of, oh, no, came right back. Amazing.
It was amazing. The best. What a night that was. What a win, what a tournament, what a postseason, and what a series for the Stanley Cup champion 2018 Washington Capitals. But I was driving out here today. Mm-hmm. I was going to do the show from my hotel room, and I got connected, and we were having a couple little issues. I said, you know what, this isn't worth stressing over. We got 4.5 hours of radio to do. I'm going to go into the studio if we can work it out. But I didn't remember being here. I'm just dumb like that. So we're driving out there, and this guy points to the right, and he's like, over there, that's the UFC headquarters. That's where all the UFC fighters train. That's Dana's offices. And I'm like, oh, I've definitely seen that before. And he points something else out to the left, and I'm like, okay, I have made this drive. Why would I have come to this studio? And I'm racking my brain over and over going, when would I have done a show in Vegas? And I'm thinking, well, I was on the beat traveling all over the place, but there wasn't a football team. I didn't do any baseball stuff out here. And so I get in here, and I'm sitting in the studio, and when I sit down, it's the exact same studio, the exact same chair, and I go, well, I'm an idiot. We were out here for a few days doing shows during the Stanley Cup. Couldn't place it until right then and there. But it was kind of cool driving by. I know you're not a big UFC guy, but where all the fighters that are out here train, mm-hmm. and where Dana does all of his pressers and everything.
Like, why do I know this?
I've already told you there's a ton of Washington football team fans out here, too. Which is pretty neat. If you guys are coming out or you're out here, you can hit me up at Grant H. Paulson. Send me either a tweet or an Instagram DM or something, and maybe we can all try to link up. There's a lot of stuff going on for the football team in these next couple of nights. At some point, Danny, you and I can try to game plan what I should do because I'll have some free time now this weekend. I'm debating possibly going to the Pac-12 championship game tonight, Utah and Oregon. I think I get a cheap ticket at Allegiant Stadium. But I don't know if I'd rather do that or just go to a sports book and a buffet or something and really do it Vegas style.
We had a great blackjack conversation at lunch yesterday. I think you're ready.
And by the way, I didn't tell you, I played a lot of blackjack on the plane coming out here. So I think I'm in a good spot.
Nice, dude. You got some dry reps?
I did. I wanted to, after our lengthy conversation where I'm like, okay, let me put what I just learned to practice. I was just, it was hitting or not, and then you find out if you win, if you bust, if they win.
Mm-hmm.
So it got me in a better mindset with the pace of the game to sit down and not annoy everyone around me.
Love it.
Let's go to Brian in Herndon on Grant and Danny, who's online too. Brian, we're talking Washington football team as they get ready for Sunday in Vegas. What's up?
Grant and Danny, how you guys doing? Happy Taco Friday.
Day.
And to you, Day.
Thank you. Hey, McKissick hurts. That he's a big part of that offense. He's going to be, I think, sorely missed this weekend. But follow-up question for you guys is Samuel going to be playing, and if so, is he going to be productive? And my other question is, if you guys were having family over for Taco Friday night, what would you guys be putting on your tacos?
So
Grant would just put meat and cheese and sort of like complain that we're all having tacos.
I would do meat. Cheese. Can I put rice in a taco, or would that make it a burrito?
If you wanted to. Okay. Are you talking about a hard taco or a soft taco?
Well, I would not eat. I mean, I'm going soft taco, obviously.
Yeah, so. I mean, hard tacos are delicious. It's like a big tortilla chip.
I mean, I would eat it. It's just not as good. So that would do those. Those are the things I would do. Nothing Mexican-y.
Yeah, so I would major in Mexican-y, obviously. You need flavor on your beef. So you're going to go salsa, you're going to go cheese.
No.
Chunks of tomatoes are dumb. People do that. They think
tomatoes.
They think it makes it a better taco. That's wrong. It doesn't.
No beans.
It's silly. Lots of beans.
No beans.
Hot sauce on a hard shell taco. Again, it's a big tortilla chip. Chip, rather. not a championship. And it's delightful. That's what I would put on my take home.
Not hot. No hot sauce.
Thoughts?
I have done hard shell tacos thanks to our boy Christian in New Orleans. But I would prefer soft shell. What's the difference between a soft shell and a burrito if you wrap the soft shell around?
It's a size thing, I think.
Okay.
Now, I could be wrong about that in terms of definition, but the soft shell taco is that tiny little tortilla there that's, again, made to be the same size once it's folded up as a hard shell correct taco.
Here's my Curtis Samuel take. That was his other question. How productive will he be? I would say somewhere around 5 touches, somewhere around 40 yards in the game. I think he'll carry the ball once or twice for like 11. I think he'll go like 3 for 32 through the air, something like that. And maybe he scores a touchdown. I would doubt it, but that's about as prolific as it would get. I think this is a very gradual easing back in for him. He's listed as questionable. He said earlier this week he felt good. I expect him to play.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the same limited thing. They learned their lesson by playing him in a football game 3 months ago, whatever the hell that was. They just cannot let him do what he might want to do or feels like he can do, etc. They just have to put the governors on him.
Here's the ranking of the three guys that were ruled out today in the order of how much it's going to hurt the team. Most important loss, J.D. McKissic, number one. Now, Rivera seemed pretty confident that Wendell Smallwood can do some McKissic-y things. I'll wait and see. I remember he had some decent games and some run with the Eagles. He's actually played here in Washington. He's on the practice squad right now. But based on Rivera's comments, he kind of let the cat out of the bag that they'll be elevating him and he'll play the McKissic role. I would be surprised if they don't miss McKissic, if Smallwood just doesn't miss a beat and gives them what 41 does. Number two is Landon Collins. Now, if this was 2 months ago and he was playing his old role, he would be last on any list of ranking guys that you're missing. But this is not that. He's been awesome, and that new role has really helped this defense to I think, allow fewer big plays and to be good in the run game. And then three is Schweitzer, and that's not a knock on him, Danny. I just kind of disrespect interior offensive line if I'm comparing it to a rover on defense or a pass-catching back who touches the ball a dozen or so times a game.
I just flipped your top two, and it's narrowly Collins.
Oh, you're going Collins?
Yeah, narrowly. And I didn't think I would say that at any point in his time here, by the way, but I think he's been instrumental in this kind of renaissance and turnaround. He's really, really helped them. Now, I don't know how long-term sustainable that is for Collins to take on pulling guards and fullbacks and tight ends and get smacked around, but in this current role right now, he has been outstanding, and I think it's allowed everybody else to be a little bit more free and easy. But 1A is McKissic. You're just going to miss him so much. I don't care that you have another small running back that also plays. It ain't the same as that guy. That was one of this administration's best finds, period, end of story, and I'm with you on Schweitzer. It's going to hurt, but not as bad as those top two.
With Waller out, Josh Jacobs is the best player for the Raiders, and both as a ball carrier and as a pass catcher, he's going to be heavily involved in Collins, at least in the flat and out wide, could have helped in some of those areas. Let's go to Dominic in Ohio on line three. Always good to hear from Dom. Sneaky, hey, great boys, town of Columbus, Ohio. What's up, Dominic?
Daniel sleeps so hard on the city of Columbus.
He really does. But he really does.
I have a very appropriate quantification.
Fantastic
of Columbus. It's fine.
Jenny, you have to update your file on Columbus. You were here 2 decades ago. It is a wonderful town.
But that's my favorite thing, by the way, is Danny's opinions on some of these towns are based on when he was there on like some tour. Like, when was the last time you were in Columbus? You said it recently. It was like 90-something.
2006, opening for Bill Burr at the Funny Bone, which is inside of a shopping mall.
Yeah, that shopping mall, by the way, is the size of Bethesda right now. It's immensely large. But with no disrespect to either of your guys' points on Collins or McKissic, which I both think you guys are perfectly right on those, I think Schweitzer is the biggest loss simply because his interplay with the other four guys on that line is so much more important to be succinct and on the same page and in tune with. And you can't just keep rotating Jags in. And credit to Coach Matzik, because he's been doing wonders with those guys. But you cannot keep doing that and sustain that high level of play, because if one of those five guys misses their assignment, the whole play is dead. Whereas if you look at a safety or a running back, it's not as highly tied to integral. Yeah, exactly.
That's fair. Appreciate you, Dominic. By the way, Danny, who'd you open for?
Bill Burr.
So, never heard of him. Did he end up doing anything or becoming big? Like, I've never heard of that guy.
Yeah, he got fairly big, my friend. It was right after he did this thing on the Home Box Office Network. He had an HBO special. I opened up for him, and he did an entirely new hour. And it's when I realized he's better at this than I am, and he's better than I'll ever be at this.
One of my favorites ever. Was he good or standoffish, like as a dude?
Awesome. Awesome.
Really?
Yeah, couldn't have been cooler.
That's good to hear. Let's go to Brian in Rockville on line four. I think we've found our first pro Turgeon call to defend
him. All are welcome.
Absolutely. I'm not a hater. I think it was time, but let's hear what Brian has to say.
Yes, you guys did. You prompted me to call, because, or the callers prompted me to call, because it was just too much here in the Turge bashing. But I do want to say, Grant, now that you're out there, hopefully you being in that studio will bring all the local teams good luck.
That would be the beauty of it, right? Bring it back. Bring the juju back.
Exactly. Several callers said, oh, well, Mark's a good guy, but he's not. You know, you're never going to see, and the same thing they can say about Gary, you're never going to hear about Maryland and any basketball scandals, and you can't say that about the football team. He was a good guy. He was a good coach. And it's just short-sighted on Maryland all the time. If they were going to get rid of him, they should have done it in April.
Agree with
that.
It's
ridiculous, all the dead money they're spending on coaches on both sides. But there is nothing more meaningless than college basketball right now, all the way up till January. You want to get hot in February. And, you know, late February, early March. This was crazy and short-sighted. The season's over now when it wasn't before, and you have to pay him anyways. It makes no sense.
So, but remember, thanks for the call.
Thank you, Brian.
He's not fired. I mean, that's how some people are terming
it. He's getting his $5 million. They're honoring the agreement. I saw that report.
But not only that, I mean, we have had now Jeff Ehrman, the insider, tell us. We have the Washington Post reporting. He stepped down. Now, you can use whatever terminology you want to use. You can use whatever, you know, diction you prefer. But based on the clues of this offseason, and as you said, the commitment to him, I do think that this was maybe him going to them as much as them coming to him. I think everyone's happy to do it. But it's not like they just decided this offseason, well, we're committing for multiple years, and then today, after they were 5-3 with, you know, losses here that they didn't like to Virginia Tech and Mason, that they just changed course and blew him out. I don't think that's what happened. Andrew and Stafford, you're on Grant and Danny. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Football team first. It's McKissick, and it's really only because he's Heineke's get-out-of-jail-free card.
That's the thing. Who's his check down guy now? Who's he going to? Oh, no, blitz is coming, or I got heat. I'm rolling out of the pocket. Who's he dumping it off to?
Yeah, McKissick has a way of just being right where he needs to be somehow for Heineke, and they're really going to miss that. As far as Turge goes, you know, you guys might be right, and there may be something coming out later where they go, it was time, Turgeon had some stuff going on and couldn't stick it out, and, you know, then that's different. But even your pro-Turgeon caller wasn't really pro-Turge, it was anti-athletic department.
Yeah, it was like they should have fired him in April. That's not necessarily right. Pro-Turge.
That was the closest we've gotten to pro-Turge.
That's a funny thing, Andrew. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you making the call. Yeah, I mean, listen, the timing of it, it does make this kind of a lost season, right? That's the part that's sort of hard to avoid. And maybe that's the thought. You just rip the Band-Aid now instead of floundering this way and doing it in January or February when you're 500 or worse and you're getting your boat raced in the Big Ten. This now gives you at least some chance to maybe try to kickstart some recruiting with Danny Manning. Maybe you build a little bit of momentum. I'm just trying to think of the reasoning and rationale.
Friday means winning off the field in lieu of a double play at 3:45. So next we'll give you a chance to call us up at 800-636-1067 and tell us how you were in the win column, teeny tiny mini moral victory, that you care about, maybe nobody else does. But that's the fun. We do it not for me or Danny or for you, but to honor the great legacy of Bruce Allen here in Washington. Also, I want to tackle Landon Collins, who's made a couple of big tackles in the backfield at the line of scrimmage the last few weeks, not being in the lineup. We'll do that next. Who steps up? How do they shift their defensive backfield and linebacking core around to best move forward without him? We'll get into the X's and O's on that on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Then what happens? With Danny, I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. And it's time to figure out how you're winning off the field. Danny, explain it.
What it looks like is this. Bruce Allen once stood in front of an assembled group of people while offering an explanation of the State of the Union for the Washington football team. He explained that the wins on the field, the things that count and matter, weren't necessarily coming, but off-field things were happening. Darius, do you know what he said? Do you have that handy for us just to just let people hear it once again?
We're winning off the field, yeah. But we got to start winning on the field.
So we decided to have folks call in at 800-636-1067 and give your little teeny tiny things that don't matter. We do it every Friday at 345. Now, sometimes, Grant, if I may, the best way to explain something is to explain what it's not. Can I? Would you indulge me for a second? I've got to tell you how I am not winning off the field, and maybe that'll help people actually win off the field. All right? I'm riding my bike today, getting a little exercise, doing my best. I got my AirPods in for the second time. An AirPod falls out of my ear and goes into the woods. It was a long bike ride. I was coming back from
Bethesda.
And I'm riding back from Bethesda. Right, I did. I rode to Bethesda, downtown Bethesda. I'm riding back
from Bethesda
on the Capitol Crescent Trail. So I'm headed towards D.C.
from Bethesda.
And it falls out of my ear. And goes into the wilderness. I'm beating the brush in the woods with a stick, and I can't find it. I lost my second left AirPod. If anyone finds it on the trail
from Bethesda,
it's mine. I don't expect to reclaim it. Therefore, I am not
winning off the field.
Great example.
Mm-hmm.
Now we know what winning off the field does not look like.
That's what it's not.
I'll give you one.
Please.
I flew from D.C. to Minneapolis, from Minneapolis to Las Vegas, and I only had one mini hiccup of having to wait to, after landing, get a gate in Vegas last night, really late, like 2 o'clock your time, 11 o'clock my time.
Uh-huh.
So all you want to do is get off the plane. You're very tired. About 15 minutes until our gate was cleared. But I think cross-country travel with a connection to have made two flights and to only have had one little 15-minute hiccup, I'm so battered and bruised as a traveler through the years. To me, therefore I am.
Winning off the field.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations to the good folks at Delta. Now, I also got to watch Cowboys Saints 30,000 feet in the air. Didn't have to pay, by the way. It was free at my seat. TV was there and ready to go when I sat down. I have very few complaints about my travel. I felt like I was winning off the field the entire night.
Winning off the field.
The first of my two flights had no one sitting next to me to my right. Everything was coming up me.
Winning off the field.
Unbelievable.
I looked over at the kid. It was probably way too comfortable.
Uh-huh.
There was a young guy about my age, probably a little younger actually, sitting in the window. And I said, dude, this is the dream. And he's like, what? And I was like, we got the empty seat between us. And I gave him Nux.
What?
I gave him Nux.
You really
I
did
said,
that?
Yeah, I said, we have an empty seat between us. And he was psyched. He gave me Nux, and he's like, dude, how awesome is that?
And this is your friend that you were traveling with, a long time, like, buddy?
No, this is a guy I met when I gave him the knuckles, when I said that to him. What do you think of that?
I think my heart stopped beating for a full 10 seconds from discomfort, secondhand discomfort.
You wouldn't get it.
You talked to a stranger and gave the stranger Nux on an airplane.
I did.
I can't believe that.
All right, let's go through a few of these. You guys got to be fast, though. We're looking for a lightning round here, like 20-second winning off the field. Let's go to Jack in Leesburg. Jack, what do you got?
Hey, fellas.
What's up, buddy?
I'm leaving work early. I'm picking up a friend from Dulles Airport, and I get to take the non-toll road on the toll road freeway all the way back to D.C. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
That's big leagues. Rich and only on line four. What's up, Richard? How are you?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Hey, buddy.
38 years old today. Wife took the day off. Got my favorite bourbon, and we did Top Golf for lunch. Therefore, I am.
Winning off the field.
That's a hell of a day. Happy
nice
birthday,
day.
Big Cat.
Happy birthday, bro. Seriously, that's awesome. Anthony and Calvert, line five. What's up?
Sat in an all-day meeting, mundane as hell, but I left with individually wrapped breakfast burritos and individually wrapped subs to take home. So I am
winning off the field.
Nice.
Let's go.
Nice.
By the way, great use of the word mundane. I thought just casual drop. That was very good.
I was actually in the meeting for a second. I knew exactly what he meant.
Matt in Stafford, who has a big game coming up. Got to turn things around for the Rams. Line three. What's up, Matty?
It's do or die time. I went out to the shed. I pulled out my silly non-LED big bulb multicolored Christmas lights, plugged it in. Every bulb lit up. Therefore, I am
winning off the field.
Every bulb lighting up. I don't even know what that would feel like, Danny. I plugged in our lights the other day in the kitchen, like four or five strands. Half of them work, half of them don't.
So when people go check the bulbs, how are you supposed to check the bulb? I never know how to do that. You just make sure they're all screwed in?
Well, you mean if it's not lit up?
Yeah, so like on the old school Christmas lights, if you would, you know, none of the bulbs would light up if one of them was messed up. And like an adult would go, "We'll check the bulbs." And I go, "Okay, for what? Bugs? For debris? Like what am I checking for?"
I think you're making sure that they're screwed in correctly, that they're snapped in, whatever they need to be. Pretty sure. I mean, there might be more to it than that. I'm no expert in Christmas lights. I just know that I did what Maddie did and plugged ours in, and I went, "Oh, I'm not going to deal with this. We're just going to go buy some new ones."
Let's just do some new ones.
That's pretty much how I did it. Beltway Blitz next includes Patrick Stevens, who's a basketball savant when it comes to the college game. We'll get his thoughts on the big news of the day. Mark Turgeon out at Maryland. We've also got a preview of Washington football and Las Vegas Raiders and the Wizards all coming up in your Blitz on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.